Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Bonnie Harper, and I'm today's worship associate. I'm joined by the Reverend Kathleen Rowlands, who serves as parish co-minister with the Reverend Wayne Arneson at the West Shore Unitarian Universalist Church in Rocky River, Ohio, as well as our music director, Hal Walker, and our director of religious education, Karen Lapidus. I'd like to extend a welcome to our guest minister, Kathleen, who says she has a deep affection for this congregation. Kathleen, would you like to say a few words of introduction?
Thank you. Thank you so much. It is so good being here with you. Though this congregation's changed a great deal since I was a member here in the 80s, it really holds a special place in my heart and my memory. Because it was here in this congregation I discovered Unitarian Universalism while a student at Kent State. It was here that I preached my first and worst sermon. And this lovely congregation still supported me. This congregation raised money to send me to my first General Assembly in New Haven, Connecticut, and I was married here in this sanctuary. So it's a dear place, and it's nice to see some friends from back in the day, Ted and Swati Vinaida. Olive Hobbs, Joel and Kathy Slater, all that I remember with deep affection. So it is great. I'm so grateful to be here and experience worship with you. Thanks.
Meg Milko has an announcement to make about last night's service auction.
I know you're probably all on the edge of your seats to find out how we did last night. And I am extremely humbled and pleased to stand up here as your auction chair and tell you that you, because of your generous spirit, raised over $25,000. Yes, it was an incredible night, and we tried to put on an event that you could enjoy yourselves at and open up your hearts and your spirit, and we saw that happen. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart. My committee thanks you. It was a lot of hard work, but well worth the effort.
And a big round of applause for Meg's hard work. Thank you.
Be ye lamps unto yourselves. Be your own confidence. Hold to the truth as to the only lamp.
There is more love somewhere. There is keep on till I
we gather on this Sabbath morn to worship in spirit and truth, to raise a joyful noise to the eternal mystery, to reconfirm our covenant, to seek wisdom and love, to strengthen our commitment to the common good. We come from many paths to explore that which is hidden, to consider the ways of our hearts, to confess how we have stumbled, to heal what is broken. We assemble in the effort to quicken our compassion and mercy, to deepen under our understanding, to renew our courage, to remember who we are. Thus do we celebrate the grace and gift of life and practice our faith to the greater glory of the Spirit. These wisdom words from Buddhist sutra and text. The nun, Jin Kang, asks the sixth patriarch, Huan Ang, I have studied the Mahaparinirvana Sutra for many years, yet there are many areas I do not understand. Please enlighten me. The patriarch said, I am illiterate. Please read out the characters to me, and perhaps I will be able to explain the meaning. Said the nun, you cannot even recognize the characters. How are you able then to understand the meaning? Truth has nothing to do with words, he said. Truth can be likened to the bright moon in the sky. Words, in this case, can be likened to the finger. The finger can point to the moon's location. However, the finger is not the moon. To look at the moon, it is necessary to gaze beyond the finger, right? O Spirit of life, O love that will not let us go, be with us in the quiet of this moment, made sacred by our attention to those things worthy of our reflection. For we know that joy and woe are woven fine. And in this moment, we feel the pulse and push of both. For we celebrate new life and birth in this congregation, and we mourn the passing of dear ones whose life and character has touched and shaped and changed us. We pray for vitality and health and strength. And we suffer with those who are struggling in mind and body and spirit. And we pray that their burdens be lightened. We cling to the beauty of this day and yet feel in our bones the melancholy pull of the season. We marvel at the stars, and we know that one day our dust will mingle with theirs. But for now, we breathe in. We breathe in awe, and we breathe out fear. We breathe in beauty. We breathe out control. And for all that lives in between those breaths, we give our thanks and praise.
Amen.
Will you love, 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 will you love? And the congregation responds, yes, I will, yes, I will, yes, I will, yes, I will. Yes, I will, yes, I will, yes, I will. Can you feel, 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 can you feel? Yes, I can, yes, I can. Yes, I can, yes, I can. Yes, I can, yes, I can. Yes, I can. And are you true, are you true? Are you true, are you true? Are you true, are you true? Are you true? Yes, I am, 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 yes, I am. The moment I saw the face is the moment I remember well. I was born into my body and I was changed in to myself. Will you love, 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 will you love? Yes, I will, yes, I will, yes, I will, yes, I will. Yes, I will, yes, I will, yes, I will.
Reading from the New Testament, Book of John, 19:37-38. Pilate asked him, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You say I am a king. For this I was born, and this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." Pilate asked him, "What is truth?"
Truth by Gwendolyn Brooks. And if sun comes, how shall we greet him? Shall we not dread him? Shall we not fear him after so lengthy a session with shade? Though we have wept for him, though we have prayed all through the night years, what if we wake one shimmering morning to hear the fierce hammering of his knuckles hard on the door? Shall we not shudder? Shall we not flee into shelter? A dear, thick shelter of familiar, propitious haze. Sweet it is, to sleep in the coolness of snug unawareness. The dark hangs heavily over our eyes.
What is truth? Asks Pontius Pilate of Jesus of Nazareth. Ever since I heard a sermon on that very passage in this very sanctuary in March of 1989 by Robert Fields, some of you may remember him a long time ago, but Robert Fields, I have been fascinated with that brief and strange encounter. For here were two men, both studied and learned in the knowledge of truth, who could have had a rich and deep theological discussion on the meaning and nuances of truth. the truth. Perhaps if Jesus had engaged Pilate in a philosophical debate, maybe Pilate would have seen fit to spare his life after all. But the Jew from Galilee was silent. And I've always wondered, why? Well, my guess is that Jesus quickly realized that the gap between Pilate's understanding of truth and his own was so wide that a quick soundbite answer would have no effect. Or perhaps he realized that the truth about which he spoke was so foreign to Pilate that he would never understand. But whatever the reason, Pilate didn't stay for an answer and Jesus didn't offer one, leaving us with that haunting question. What is truth and why does it matter? Well, every religion worth its name must have some way of accessing, pondering, and articulating the truth. And our fourth principle reminds us that we covenant to affirm and promote a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And we take that covenant pretty seriously. But in good Unitarian Universalist fashion, it doesn't prescribe for you what is the truth. It leaves it up to us to figure out, to answer Pilate's question for ourselves. So this morning, I want to tell you some truth tales, stories, really, about how we find, name, and claim truth for ourselves, and what's at stake when we fail to do that, or when we continue to repeat familiar but unexamined truths. And I want to look at what happens when we speak our truth to one another, either from a place of frustration or compassion, and what difference that makes in our own personal lives and in the lives of our church communities. All this in 20 minutes. So, but first, you know, we have to start with Pilate's question. And Robert Fildes, in his 1989 sermon, ventured an answer. He said, "As far as I know, Pilate's question has not been answered satisfactorily, let alone definitively. Describing truth is a little like describing electricity. It's easy to tell what electricity does and even how it's made, but it's impossible to say precisely what it is. Indeed, if you look up the definition of the word truth, the first one is the quality or state of being truthful, which does not help us very much. But Fildes later offers a definition, which he also argues with, but he says, truth is the certainty which is held against all contradiction. It is complete and perfect and admits of no degrees. And then he continues, he says, if this sounds somewhat like a definition of faith, my reply is that truth and faith may not be twins, but they are at least cousins. Now, if we try to get to the root of the word truth, we have to go back to the Old English, which describes it as more akin to the word fidelity or faithfulness. I like that definition. Because for me, my understanding of truth is that it is a lived experience, not an intellectual assent, and it is being faithful to values and principles that I live by, while acknowledging that my truth will always be imperfect, just as our knowledge is always incomplete. So all of this may seem a bit abstract and unrelated to our day-to-day life, but just last month, our nation experienced two sets of truth claims at war with one another, and we, the people, suffered as a result of it. Do you know what I'm talking about? The infamous government shutdown and the verbal war that led up to it. We heard Senator Ted Cruz pontificating and the Democrats equivocating. I saw a film clip on TV. There were the Democrats on one side, the Republicans on the other side of the aisle, and the gap between the two of them wide as the Grand Canyon. And while Republicans were citing reasons for bringing the country to the brink of shutdown on the basis of imaginary high moral ground that they claimed, the Democrats were hurling insults at them across the aisle, calling the Republicans insane people who have lost their minds, saying to the press that trying to talk with a Republican was like negotiating with people with bombs strapped to their chest. End quote. We know that this level of vitriol can be pretty intense in politics, but the statements hurled across the great divide between Republicans and Democrats it reached a new low last month. I wanted some eloquent legislator to pull a Rodney King and say, please, can't we just all get along? But instead, our government reminded me of those silly Zacks from Dr. Seuss's story. I'll not budget in my tracks until you and me and the whole world stand still. The government was a case study in what not to do. Why was it so vitriolic? That's the best word I can think of. It's because both sides were committed to their version of the truth. And instead of the truth setting us and the House and the Senate free, it enslaved the entire country in a struggle to understand what is the truth here, and more importantly, how to navigate these difficult waters when your truth and my truth are so far apart. It's a particularly vexing problem for religious liberals who want to go along to get along with your fundamentalist neighbors or your coworkers or that staunchly conservative uncle whom you're likely to see at Thanksgiving dinner this month. If you want to avoid descending into insults, arguments, and bitter divisions, that may come only at the cost of something we hold dear, our understanding of the truth. So conflicts like these about equally valued competing beliefs confound us, confuse us, and can spiritually, I think, destroy us if we can't find a way to meet in the middle. So one of the biggest untruths about this faith tradition of ours is the statement, oh, you're a Unitarian Universalist, you can... Right, you can believe anything you want. Right. I guess technically that is true. I mean, as an individual, you can hold racist, homophobic, misogynistic beliefs, but you will find no support, no validation for those beliefs, and you will not be allowed to promote or act on those beliefs in a Unitarian Universalist church. And I suspect that we will argue with you and attempt to help you to see the error of your beliefs. So let's look at some things that Unitarian Universalists make as truth claims, that is, positions around which we desire to be faithful. Each year at General Assembly, we make statements of conscience or immediate witness that constitute a moral and ethical platform as Unitarian Universalists. And over the years, we've passed many, many statements. Statements on the right to choose, on abortion, women's equality, more recently, environmental justice, and immigration as a moral issue. So just out of curiosity, I looked up the justice statements of other denominations that we usually think we disagree with, and found that while these statements were always rooted, they rooted their decisions in biblical authority, many of their statements of conscience sounded similar to ours. Just as an example, the environment. After a lot of where-to-fores and there-ases and stating the beauty of God's creation as expressed in the Bible and so forth, one religiously conservative denomination resolved to be better stewards of all the created order and to seek ways to personally and corporately care for the earth and all those who dwell therein. And shortly after the Unitarian Universalists stood on the side of love in Phoenix, Arizona, this religiously conservative group made their own pronouncement in Phoenix that said, while we first acknowledge the rights of the states to make laws about immigrants, any form of nativism, mistreatment, or exploitation is inconsistent with the gospel of Jesus Christ, and we resolve that our governing authorities implement a just and compassionate path to legal status for undocumented immigrants already living in our country. Both of those pronouncements from the Southern Baptists. It surprised me because I realized that there may be issues where if you put a Unitarian Universalist and a Southern Baptist in a room, it's not a joke. This is not going into a joke. Maybe we could find a way to meet in the middle. And although we start from very different premises, for example, about how the earth and the life that inhabits it was created, and although we may argue endlessly about creationism versus evolution, we can still find a common ground on something that's more important, our common responsibility to taking better care of a planet in crisis. Ah, yes, I can hear you thinking. That's all well and good, but you don't have a relative like mine sitting across from you at the Thanksgiving table. Well, actually, I have. Let me tell you about one of those kinds of relatives. I'm going to give you an example first. In 2012, when Minnesota newspapers were full of the debate about a ballot amendment to define marriage as only between one man and one woman, there was a letter that appeared from one Thad Schunkweiler, and he began his letter to the editor in this way. He said, "I am a farm-raised, gun-loving, football-watching, church-attending, pro-life-supporting, higher-ed-teaching, family-raising, limited-government-wanting, conservative, red, white, and blue-bleeding, yes, Republican." Now, that pretty much describes some members of the extended family that I used to spend Thanksgivings with. And all too often during Thanksgiving meals, my family and I figured out that we would never be able to successfully argue with our relatives, and that our positions were too deeply entrenched. So we kept silent. We gripped our dessert forks a little tighter. We tried not to catch each other's eyes when our version of Thad Schunkweiler went around on his annual rant about the welfare queens or digs about the gays. You know, it's hard to know what the right time is sometimes to stand up for the values that Unitarian Universalists profess to be true. And there are times that I feel my silence on issues that are important to me as a religious liberal will be seen as acceptance of commonly held opinions that I would find abhorrent. And those are the times that I go into combat mode and I have to bear witness to my truth and my values. And as a recent experience taught me, there is always a cost to bearing witness to the truth as you understand it. Let me tell you what happened. It was a couple of days after the Boston Marathon bombing. And the Boston area was in lockdown. The police had captured one of the young men. The brother was on the manhunt for the other. There were rumors and half-truths flying around. Stories were changing hourly. That day, I was in the locker room at the gym, and I was getting my swimsuit on, and I overheard a conversation between two women. And one of the women was a regular at the gym. Our schedules sort of coincide. I saw her almost every time I was there. I'll call her Elaine. And Elaine said to the other woman, she said, "Can you believe what happened in Boston?" And the other woman murmured her awareness of the bombing and, you know, echoed, "Yeah, isn't that awful?" And then Elaine said, "It's those damn Muslims. They're nothing but trouble. They're nothing but trouble. They should just round them all up and deport them all." Well, I stepped out of the changing booth and I found myself directly in the middle of their conversation. And I spoke without thinking. I said, "You cannot make such a broad statement about an entire group of people. You just can't." Well, she looked at me and she said, "I wasn't talking to you." I said, "Right, you weren't, but this is a public place, and you can't just say you deport all Muslims in the country. Really? You're going to condemn an entire group of people because of the actions of two 20-year-olds? "Well," she said, "you're entitled to your opinion, and I'm entitled to mine." "Well," I said, "your opinion is wrong." It's just wrong to say that. I left the locker room shaking with anger. Well, we've never spoken since. In fact, we avoid each other whenever we see each other at the gym. And on the one hand, it felt really good to just blurt out my truth, that belief that I stand by. It felt just, it felt righteous. And yet, in my need to speak my truth, to counter her bigotry with the rightness of my belief, I also slammed a door shut. And in hindsight, I really wish I had hit the pause button on my anger. And I wish I'd taken a moment to pray. And then I wish I had the presence of mind to be more curious about her statement. Now, part of finding the middle truth is allowing for the fact that all of us are more complex and perhaps more nuanced than we can see at first glance or experience in a hot emotional encounter. Like Thad Schunkweiler. You remember him? Thad? The farm-raised, gun-toting guy who wrote the letter to the editor? Did you make the assumption on the position that he would take in his letter on the marriage amendment bill that ultimately failed to pass in Minnesota? Well, the rest of the letter went like this. He said, you know, I'm a red, white, and blue bleeding Republican endorsed candidate for the Minnesota House, and I will be voting no on the marriage amendment. He said, I'm fully aware that this position will cost me both support and votes. And while I can live without those votes, I cannot live with the fact or the idea that I may have to look my friends and neighbors in the eye and deny them the rights that I enjoy based on who they love. We have some serious challenges facing our country and state government. Denying rights to our friends and neighbors isn't on my list. Thad Schunkweiler, Mankato, Minnesota. Now there's a person I could consider voting for. And yet, had I read only the first part of his letter, I might not have realized that he was making a case against Minnesota's version of Amendment 1, which regrettably was passed here in Ohio in 2004. So when capitulation doesn't feel right, when compromise seems impossible, and combat would only make things worse, there's got to be a middle way. The Buddha talks a lot about the middle way. Maybe that middle way, that middle truth, has less to do with the facts and more to do with how we bring our best selves to every encounter. And it's also acknowledging the spiritual damage that zealotry can cause, even if the cause is the right one. So sometimes the middle truth has to be found in a place of the heart and not in a place where irreconcilable social and political positions are endlessly debated. One of the most dauntingly polarized places on earth is the nation of Israel, which occupies the land once known as Palestine, once held by Palestine. My husband and I traveled there 2 years ago. And we encountered many efforts to find the middle truth among peacemakers on both sides of the security wall. But none was more moving than the Parents Circle Family Forum. This organization had 600 bereaved parents, which included Palestinian and Israeli parents and relatives who lost children and relatives in the ongoing conflict. We met Rami, who is an Israeli who lost his daughter in a bus bombing during the first Intifada, the uprising, and Aisha, a Palestinian woman whose brother was killed by an Israeli soldier during that same Intifada. They told us, we who have paid the highest price possible, we need to listen to each other. And this Family Circle Forum brings people from Israel, Palestine, and around the world to hear each other's stories, to seek together a middle truth that could end the violence before more children are lost. So I want to leave you with one more story. It's a final story of how a congregation eventually found their own way through places in their hearts to the middle truth. The story's been told. It's probably been embellished a little bit, as all good stories are. But as Marcus Borg, the biblical scholar, likes to say, I don't know if the story happened exactly this way, but I know it to be true. So once upon a time, there was an old New England Unitarian Universalist congregation that was remodeling their sanctuary. And right up there, right there in front, was a cross. New members were offended by that cross and insisted that in the remodel it come down. The longtime members love the cross. So they found themselves on two sides of the sanctuary aisle, the cross cringers and the cross savers. And the argument became bitter and divisive. And finally, one of the members, Ruth, came up to the microphone and she spoke. And she told about how that cross had been put there by her late husband, Harry. And he had made the cross himself out of wood from one of the trees, the old trees that had been cut down on the church property. And that cross had been hanging there in the sanctuary for his memorial service. And it brought her such comfort every time she looked at it. Well, a newer member, Dan, spoke about how he was raised Catholic and he was abused by a priest. And he had left that church a long time ago, but every time he saw that cross, it reminded him of those days as a child and the weight of the authority of the church under it. And it made him feel not safe. Not safe in his own congregation. Well, no one spoke for a few moments after Ruth and Dan. They were silenced by the complex realities of the situation and that each of them had expressed. But Ruth got up to the microphone again and she said, Dan, I don't know you. But I can't imagine what it was like. So after hearing your story, I must insist, the cross should come down. Well, then Dan got up to speak. Dan said, Ruth, I don't know you very well either. I didn't know that that cross had a history. It came from a tree that was on the church grounds, and I didn't know it gave you such comfort. So I think I'll change my position. I think we should keep it where it is. Well, the cross did come down eventually. It was moved to a smaller chapel in the church. Both sides were able to put into practice the covenant that so many of us, this congregation, my own congregation, say each and every week. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and help one another. Now that is the truth.
Somebody told.
Oh, okay.
Somebody told me what they think, as though it was the only thought to have. And though I'm barely listening, I disagree. Somebody wrote it on my wall, and then my friends, we gathered round and liked and didn't like, and now it's all forgotten. The way I'm feeling proves the thing that I believe in. I may be wrong, but I choose the vision that I'm seeing. The way I know it makes me try to push it just a little. When I'm feeling so strong, it's time to meet them in the middle. Somebody told me right from wrong, my heart was feeling something different. I thought and didn't think with any love at all. And when I vowed to change the world, I thought I had the power in me. I spoke and didn't speak with any love at all. The way I'm feeling proves the thing that I believe in. Maybe wrong, but I choose the vision that I'm seeing. The way I know it makes me try to push it just a little. When I'm feeling so strong, it's hard to meet them in the middle. I'm reaching out across the aisle to find the other, reaching out to me. My heart creates a way to find a place to compromise. I'm reaching out across the aisle to find the other, reaching out to me. My heart expands the space to find a way to finally compromise. Somebody spoke with words of love. Somebody heard the words and listened, and after conversation, then they both agreed. The way I'm feeling doesn't prove the thing that I believe in. I may be wrong, but I choose to open up my vision. And even though I try to push it just a little, when I'm feeling so strong, it's time to meet them in the middle.
May you go forth from this place knowing you are good and knowing you are loved. May you go out from this community blessed and be a blessing to others. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry with us until we are together again. Go in peace.